subject of purification of the mind, we were discussing how man becomes aware of his Purusha, the central being, reflecting itself at different levels of nature. Now he is posed as the mental being, Manomaya Purusha. Now in life force, Pranamaya Purusha. Now in the physical body, the Annamaya Purusha, or the material being. These are all simultaneous positions taken by the soul on the different principles of existence. And common to them all, one factor, as long as we live in ignorance, is that the soul or the Purusha is a slave, is subject to nature. And we said that the first step towards liberation of ourselves from this slavery to nature is to withdraw our consciousness, our awareness, our mental being from the activities of nature. Once we start doing it systematically as a discipline, we become aware that our Purusha, our soul or our central being, is no more involved in the activities of nature, but he is witnessing from a position aloof all that goes on. He is the Sakshi, the witness. In certain yogas, this itself is considered as a liberation. But actually, it is only a step. The first step towards disinvolvement from nature and acquiring a positive poise in our effort upwards is to take the witness stand. And when we observe things as witness, we see nature goes on, though we are not involved in it. Nature goes on with their movements. One after another they go on. And we find that our external personalities get involved, whether inwardly we approve of it or not, by habit, by stress of circumstances. The determinations of nature are stronger than the self-willings of our being. Still, if we go on observing the determinations and the movements of nature, the being finds that these determinations, these movements of nature, are really dependent upon the sanction, the yes of the Purusha. Unless the sanction is there, the movement cannot go on. Once you become aware of this hold on nature, that whatever may have been the impetus given so far by karma or by habit, fresh determinations can form themselves only with the sanction. You get a foothold. You start getting mastery over nature, and gradually, by accepting or refusing to give sanction, you get nature under your control. Thus, what one starts as witness, sakshi, realizes as the sanctioner, the upholder, the bharta, and then culminates in the master of nature, Ishvara. This is the usual process of liberating oneself from nature. And when the object is not only liberation from nature, but even to acquire mastery over nature, this is the third step after getting the sanction poise to develop the master poise. If one observes that there is scope for free will in the determinations of nature, it is not false. But even the free will that most of us feel, the freedom to choose, the sense of freedom, that also turns out to be a part of nature's machinery. Providence has designed nature in such a way that its own decision, its own determination, it can present to you as if it is you are going to decide. Actually, the choice that is given to you is limited. It is partly determined by the past events. What has happened in the past, they create certain habitual movements, grooves, tendencies, what we call samskaras, and they incline your mind in a certain direction. Nature also assembles certain circumstances in such a way that you are obliged to decide in a particular way. These are true determinations of nature, which the soul or the being has to take account of. And this continues to be so as long as we accept to live and function in the triple formula of ignorance. Ignorance of the body, ignorance of life, ignorance of the mind. But in our awakened moments, we have some perception that while all this may be true in our day-to-day life, somewhere in our being there is the point of real control. If we touch there, we can overrule the determinations of nature. Only that point of control does not belong to the mind. It is outside the mental range. It is in the realm of the spirit, spiritual consciousness, or something higher than the mind, the realms of the supermind. Only when we go deep into the spirit or high above and cross the mental border do we get near the possibility of exercising real control over nature. Even those who do not admit the necessity of achieving the supermind and are content to develop the spiritual consciousness to their utmost, they feel the freedom of the central being reflected in the spirit. And they do exercise, yogis, sadhaks, seekers, who have found a lodging into the spirit, they gain control over nature to a certain extent. More control is when they are completely identified with the spirit. But this identity with the spirit in traditional yogas takes place only in conditions of trance. And in conditions of such trance, activity is not possible. So, they ruled out the possibility of practical control over all movements of nature as long as one stays in the body which is subject to the rule of ignorance. The situation changes if we make an effort of ascent into the higher levels of consciousness. If we go beyond the highest levels of the mind and get into the supramental poise, just as we are now poised in the mind, the life and the body, if by yoga we gain access to the Gnostic levels, the level of truth consciousness of which Sri Aurobindo speaks, and build up some kind of identity with that consciousness, we become free. We become swarat, no longer slave to nature. But even there, the whole difficulty in proceeding is due to the ignorance and the shadow of ignorance which sticks to us. To a long distance. Because we function, we know only through the mind, and mind knows only through the, in fragments. Mind never has the knowledge, mind has to seek knowledge, mind has to piece knowledge. Mind is never the knower, mind cannot know nature, mind is not the jnata. The way out is to develop the mind, to drop the mind into the vijnana, into the supermind. When your habitual poise in the mind as the manomaya purusha yields to a new poise in the vijnanamaya purusha, in the supermind, then you have the knowledge. Knowledge gives the power, and power gives the control. But this cannot come about unless we force nature to change radically. From top to toe, centuries of past habits govern our external nature. Step by step, element by element, nature has to be forced to change. There is a natural nexus formed at the ego point between the mind, the life force and the physical body. There is a strong nexus, and all is focused, centered in the ego. Any action, any reaction has to proceed in this pattern. This has to be changed. All our systems of ethics, discipline, religions, they aim at modifying, putting on different colors over this working. But nobody ever thinks of uprooting this nexus that has formed around the ego and lifting up nature into a totally new dimension. In the present, mixed and confused action of nature where each part conflicts with the other, where mind, what mind wants, life force is not ready. What life force wants to do, the mind is not ready to sanction. And what both want, the body does not cooperate. Now this internal conflict, giving rise to a mixed and confusion of nature, that has to be corrected. And the first step towards this correction is purification. Purification, a psychological purification, slowly and steadily untying the knot of ego. To ask oneself at every moment, at every situation, whether what I am going to decide is being influenced by the ego or by the truth of the situation, whether it is convenient or inconvenient to the ego. This discipline, psychological discipline, has to be practiced, leading gradually to a conversion of the instruments of nature, mind, life, body, heart, emotions, conversion of them into a higher order of function. The present order is tied to lower nature, but the direction has to be changed. That is what Sri Aurobindo gives in a small formula. First, there is purification, shuddhi. When shuddhi proceeds sufficiently, there is mukti, liberation from ego. From liberation, we achieve a certain perfection of nature with the aid of the Gnostic consciousness, siddhi. But siddhi is not all, is not the end. Siddhi leads to an uncaused bliss. The culmination of the supermind is an ananda. Even as all creation started from ananda, it ends or culminates in ananda. That is bhukti. Shuddhi, mukti, siddhi, bhukti. But all these will remain empty phrases till we grow out of our limited, narrow individuality. As long as we think we are identified or we are separate from others, I am only this mind, this body and this life and this soul and this heart, I am an incomplete creature. My individuality, the individual center remains, but it has to be extended. Unless you extend your consciousness, it is impossible to bring about a change in nature. It is also impossible to rise even to the overmental levels, let alone the Gnostic levels. At present, our life is characterized by a sort of mutual seizing. Each one considers himself separate from others. The whole world is foreign to him. And with whatever little strength he has got, he tries to appropriate whatever is possible for himself. Gradually, however, nature teaches him to learn to expand, and he learns to expand only because he stands to gain more. He extends his interests, he builds up a family, clan and so on. His interests become larger and larger. And he adds to his sense of position the sense of sympathy. cooperation, leading ultimately to harmony. But these are all processes of nature. The true universalization can come only when we strive from the soul level. Mentally, if we conceive everything as one, it remains a mental formula. There has to be a practical change in our day-to-day relations, which can come only when we tackle the problem at the soul level. We must feel at the soul level, at the psychic level, that we are one with others. We embrace the whole of the universe in our consciousness. And the true unity, universal feeling, universal consciousness can be built only through the soul. Otherwise, nature has its own way of upsetting whatever balance we arrive at, whatever synthesis we arrive at through our mind. The three gunas, rajas, tamas and sattva, in their operation, they upset all situations, and one can never be sure of one's stabilized experience of universalization. But if one bases oneself at the soul level, then whatever little one gains is a permanent gain. And as this universalization of individuality proceeds, and one gets away from the operations of the gunas of nature, one puts on the nature, the higher nature of the supramental being. One becomes the samrat, the master. It is out of question that such an individual can exist for himself or in himself alone. It is a universal and a global consciousness that flows through whoever is open, whoever is identified in soul with it, and whatever help is needed elsewhere, whatever vibrations are needed to heal or to uplift, they flow without so much as an outer knowledge and an outer sanction from the person concerned. For the individual, the whole universe becomes his empire, and the Gnostic consciousness, the Gnostic delight, the Gnostic power, the Gnostic will flow through him over the rest of humanity. To function from the soul level and the ethical values do not contradict soul values. True ethical values do not contradict, but situations may arise when an action that one is called upon to do may appear to an ignorant mind as unethical. But as long as one does not function from the ego level, but one functions only in obedience to the higher will, there is no choice. Ethics, the laws of man-made laws of ethics meant for a different grade of humanity, those ethical laws do not govern him. That is why the Indian tradition, even before a man can reach the supramental levels, even a man of spiritual liberation, they gave him the freedom of a parivrajaka, a wanderer of the spirit, who is not bound by laws of matter or of mind. It is quibbling to think that those people have no morality, so they will be immoral and all that. It is foreign to their nature, it is below their dignity to do things which are immoral. But they don't desist from things because they are immoral. No, because they are beneath them, because they just can't think of them. So this is a very theoretical and a hypothetical question which many raise. Those who have not risen above the need of observing ethics, they can't conceive a situation when ethics no longer applies. Ethics are meant to humanize the animal. Ethics are meant to subjugate tamas and rajas and bring man to the level of the sattvic, where spiritual law will take possession. Otherwise, when Krishna asks Arjuna to fight, take a holiday of fight, where is the ethics there? Where is ahimsa there? Non-violence. What function is Rudra doing? The destroyer. If nobody is to be hurt, there are occasions when things have to be done, whether they appear ethical or not. There is the question, the famous question which Gandhi had raised of euthanasia, that is, a cow was suffering. Doctors say the cow can't live. But are you going to allow the cow to groan in agony till it dies, or are you going to put it to sleep? Big controversy there was. I was a student at that time, in Harijan or Young India. There was a huge controversy. I don't remember what Gandhi did afterwards. Dalal, do you remember?
Yes, he allowed it to
be. He allowed it to be slain. Now, Sri Aurobindo says differently. He says, in this thing, it is not so much the pity for the animal that moves you as your nervous inability to stand the sight of that suffering. So it is for yourself, out of consideration, great consideration for yourself, that you are thinking you are relieving the animal from suffering. But he asks, what does the soul of the animal feel about it? Could it not be that the soul has chosen intense suffering in order to do its round turn in evolution more quickly? One has to ask the soul, and till one has the knowledge of what the soul wants, one has no right to take away the life. He says, for all that you know, the soul may be still sticking to life in spite of the pain. The will to life is there at all levels. So where is the question of ethics here? Ethics is a double-edged knife. It can work both ways.
There's a modern equivalent of the Gandhian dilemma.
But were the patients consulted?
They apparently, couldn't be consulted. They were so far out of it.
Yes.
That's what the article implied.
I thought that was the only thing that could be done. Not to do anything, leave it to nature.
That was his position.
Leave it to nature.
Yeah.
Mother also, I remember, in some cases, she asked medicine to be stopped so that everything could happen according to the wishes of the soul without interference from the human end. But when doctors are convinced that there is no possibility of cure, of help, I remember at that controversy I read, but I thought he acted sensibly in not giving an injection but letting things to nature. Because when the soul really wants to go, it doesn't consult doctor or lawyer. It just leaves. There have been cases, as I said once before, that number of people, when they were ill, when they were suffering, they wrote letters to mother saying that please relieve us, we are a burden to everybody, to those around us, we have no interest in living, we will come back in a new body, we will come back in green group and join the playground. All that they said. And mother said that she sent a force to help the soul to go, but the force came back, because she said those